Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump Podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
And my name is Ashton.
Good morning, gentle people.
Hello.
Good morning.
How are we doing?
Doing all right, thanks.
So good.
Okay. So good. How are you?
How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, actually.
Good.
Because it happened last night at the time of recording, we don't have a specific question about it, so I thought maybe we could hop in right now and talk about the developer direct that Xbox / Bethesda did on Wednesday.
Well, I've only looked at Hi-Fi Rush. I've not caught up yet on the whole event.
Mm. It was only like 45 minutes long.
Yeah.
Because I'm not that interested in Redfall. So I was like, I'm not going to watch it live because it's probably going to be mostly Redfall.
Yes.
So I'll just wait and see if there's anything else. And I will probably watch the actual Redfall stuff as well eventually, but I wasn't desperate to see it. So
right.
Yeah.
Ashton, you were a big fan of the presentation.
Yeah,
I
watched it this morning and I was really like just having a good time. Just thought it was nice. Mm-hmm. It was all like kind of as if they were writing on the screen, like old school. It kind of gave me like old school PowerPoint presentation vibes.
Yes.
But in the best way. I really
enjoyed
it. We
know that you love a PowerPoint.
You do.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really nice. And they got like chats from the devs. There wasn't any like extra kind of like snazzy unnecessary guff. It was just kind of like, here are the devs, here's some talking about the gameplay mechanics, here's a little fun fact about them underneath their name, how fun and cute, aren't we so quirky. And I was like, yes you are, love it.
Lots of dot matrix printer sound effects as well.
Noises. I just thought it was nice.
Yeah,
it was just a nice little show.
It was we only saw a handful of games there, which is
five games to be
which is what we were expecting. Minecraft Legends. You again, Ashton, you quite like the look.
I like the look of it. Wasn't really that interested, and I don't know if I'll spend money on it. But I was watching, they were talking about the PvP version of the game, and I was quite intrigued by it. They were like, you can go in a team of four, go against another team of four, and you can like run and explore the world. They're all procedurally generated, so every time it's different.
Well, so, you are our resident child, so if anyone's going to cover that game,
we'll
have to get you in on it.
And you can like go off and play, or like go off and explore, or try and get new mounts or resources for your base, or you can stay at the base and just build it up so people can't get through. There's like traps you can set. You can collect mobs so that you can go and attack the other base, and you've got like 50 skeletons behind you that are coming to attack. I just thought it looked quite fun. I don't know how it plays like the story mode itself, but from the PvP version, if I had three friends to play with, I'd be well up for giving that a go in online, because I think it looks quite fun.
Yeah, I liked the look of it as well. Obviously, it's got the Minecraft aesthetic, but I enjoy that being applied to other genres.
Yeah.
I think it's also a cool look.
The baddies are called piglins, and I thought they were quite cute.
That's great.
They were like, they will attack you because they're going to attack both teams. They're just like, they might come and attack.
They're coming, Peter.
They're coming. The piglins.
They're coming.
And I just thought they were quite like, if not friend, why so cute?
Try and pet one. See what happens.
Can you pet the piglin?
Yeah.
We then had a discussion about Forza that felt like it wouldn't end.
I skipped past that.
There was a lot of car information in there. If you're interested in Forza, maybe go and watch that. Hi-Fi Rush was the surprise appearance. It was announced, being developed by Tango Gameworks, who previously have worked on The Evil Within, and is headed by Shinji Mikami, Resident Evil creator and survival horror legend.
Mm.
And Hi-Fi Rush is not that. It's
no.
like
no.
a combination of, it looks a lot like Sunset Overdrive.
Yes, what I thought.
Jet Set Radio-ish.
Jet Set Radio-ish with sort of a combat stylings of Metal Hellsinger from last year, where everything's in time to the beat. They must have been gutted when Metal Hellsinger was announced and released.
Yeah, but I guess it's like so aesthetically different and
it
even genre-wise. Yeah,
I think that one's meant to be, Metal Hellsinger is meant to be quite challenging. Mm. And it looks like there's a lot of... hello? Jesus, someone really wants to get into the building. It looks like there's a lot of not accessibility as such, but also, yes, accessibility to make this game fun to play. Because everything's in time to the beat. The whole world moves to the beat. Enemies attack to the beat. QTEs are in time to the beat. Boss fights are in time to the beat.
And I think they said that like your combat will always be in time with the beat, but if you actively... are in time with the beat when you, with your button presses, your combat's more
but you get
effective.
Rewarded. Yeah, they said like you won't, if you like miss the beat, it's not like your attack's not going to do any damage or whatever. It's just like you get bonus stuff if you're on the beat.
Mm.
And they shadow dropped it, no less.
It's been
flipping ages since something like that's happened. They said it's available
right now
on Game Pass. Yeah. So when you're listening to this, you can go and play it and check it out. It looks really cool. I'd like to give it a go.
It's honestly the first game that's been... released, not that I've heard of, because there's Starfield as well, that has made me like actually think I now require an Xbox. I know you can play it on Steam as well, but everything else that Microsoft have released up to this point or has been an Xbox exclusive, I've been like, okay, well, you know, that looks great, but I'll wait until this pile builds up before I really want to get the other platform. Mm. But now that has been shown off and been released, and I'm like, I really want to play that. That looks really good. So
I've already downloaded it on PC Game Pass to play tonight.
Yeah, I might have to get it on PC.
The Elder Scrolls Online, there was a big old section about that. They're making all of their expansions free for a time,
I believe. I think so. And they've been introducing their third class since launch, like a new one. So I think she was like called an Arcana or something. Something magic-y.
I kind of tuned out a little bit.
Me too.
Because I did give The Elder Scrolls Online a go, admittedly, a long time ago. Mm. And I bounced off it because I wanted Skyrim with friends. And that's not really what it was. It was definitely an MMO. And it has a lot of players who really like it.
It does. Like, for an MMO, it looks like it's pretty good. But I have a kind of a bit of a resentment for Elder Scrolls Online just because I think partly because it's continuing to do so well.
You see all those expansions like Elsewhere and Morrowind.
Yeah,
and you think, man... imagine if those were single player.
Yeah. I think because it's doing so well, they're not in any hurry to bring out a single player game. Mm. So it's potentially causing a longer delay for the next Elder Scrolls. But
absolutely. Well, hopefully we get some Elder Scrolls news soon. The main event, though, was Redfall, which I believe is releasing on the 6th of May?
2nd of May.
Second of May? First week of May is when it's coming out. And we got a big old look at the gameplay of that. I have a lot of faith in
Arcane.
Thank you, Arcane. Yeah. And I really enjoyed Deathloop. And there was a section in there where clearly they're playing on their own and they're doing some sort of side content where they're sneaking into a brewery that's been overtaken by
vampires.
Not actually.
Werewolves.
Occultists. Thank you. Yes. And that looks like proper Arcane.
It looks
fun. You were able to go up a ladder around the side and go in where you wanted. But the actual sort of almost Left 4 Dead, Back 4 Blood style gameplay wasn't really doing much for me. And when they're in the house, there's like a vampire who runs at you and he's like running in a straight line and then just 90 degree turns and then runs at you again. And I don't know how scary that's going to be.
No.
If indeed it's meant to be scary.
That's why it's not, at the moment, it's not for me. I mean, like I say, I will actually watch that at some point, but I wasn't desperate to watch the event. So I was like, it's going to be Redfall. And I don't think Redfall is the one for me. Even though I do historically, Arcane have done some really good stuff. But yeah.
I'm quite excited for Redfall. Mm-hmm. Have been since they announced it. And I quite like the way it looked and the way you can interact with each other. There's one of the characters makes like a jump pad that other characters can use.
Nice, yeah.
And it looked like there was a lot of ways that you could help other players out. So there's like quite a focus on having friends with you as well as a single player, which is nice. Mm-hmm. And it's coming to Game Pass day one as well. So
it's more open than I was expecting as well.
Yeah.
So like quite a big open map rather than the sort of linear approach we're used to with, well, at least my expectations for Redfall was. It's like Left 4 Dead, and so I thought you'd play through it in a linear fashion, but it seems you can kind of just wander around and do side stuff.
And there's like safe rooms and areas you can, what's the word?
areas you can.
You can, like, from vampires. You can
from nests.
Yeah, but you, what can you take? You can take the. You can liberate them from the vampires.
Right. Yes. There's sections that you take. Yeah, you're taking back the city.
Yeah. Oh,
and also there are these nests that you have to clear out. That sounds like they're procedurally generated. They said they're different every time you go in, and there's a resource at the heart of them or something like that. It looks like there's a lot of stuff to do in this game. I don't know if I'm hugely excited for it, but I think. It looks way more fun to play with people, obviously. Mm. And I don't know that I'm going to have people to play it with.
That's the thing. Like, I just don't play multiplayer, really. Like, hardly ever. Unless we're on couch. You know, if I'm around your house or we're streaming, that's when I do multiplayer games.
A la sofa.
Yeah, a la sofa, exactly. But at home, I just don't log on and play multiplayer games. So I don't think I'm going to have that much opportunity to even play this game.
Okay, well then we'll play it, actually. Okay. We'll give it a go. But that was the developer underscore direct, and I liked it. It was almost state of play Nintendo Direct-esque in that it's a very sort of truncated experience, highly produced beforehand, and it was not awkward in the slightest, which a lot of these conferences run the risk of being. So yeah, I'd recommend people go and watch it. It's only like 45 minutes long, and there's some good stuff in there. Now, though, it's time to talk about this week's sponsor.
Oh, yeah.
Each and every week, we are sponsored by a very real video game adjacent sponsor that helps us keep the lights on in here. Dead Island 2, the spider, is still not...
Just on holiday.
Is still on holiday.
The longest holiday ever.
Ashton's house. Mm. Ashton, I believe you have the ad read for
us? I do, yeah. So there's a game coming out tomorrow that some people might find a bit scary.
Okay.
A little bit spooky.
Ooh.
Especially... if you suffer from celiac disease and you can't have gluten.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I see it coming.
Yeah.
And it might have, there's little ghoulies running around their wheat protein and you can't...
Chop off their limbs.
Chop off their limbs to stop them from giving you tummy aches.
Yes.
It's, of course, Bread Space. Rebake.
Okay, the rebake I didn't see coming.
Yeah. That was a left jab that caught you out of nowhere, wasn't it?
It was,
you
yeah.
ready for that.
Yeah, Bread brilliant. Space, the rebake, is coming this week.
I've heard it's got like quite a good special edition that comes with some physical goodies. Can you talk us through that?
The toasty version.
The toasty version, exactly. Yeah, that's what I was talking about, yeah.
Comes with a helmet that's made of bread.
Yeah. You have to consume it quickly. Yeah.
A steel book that's just bread.
Yeah.
Is a bread book.
It's like inside the steel book, there's just one nice slice of bread. Mm. A nice crisp white slice of bread.
Mm. It's like a Warburton sandwich thing.
Yeah. And then like all of the like art is just, you know, all the concept art of the wheat ghoulies and stuff. So it's not actually real though.
This one's really snuck up on us though. Dead Space Remake. I knew it was coming out in January,
tomorrow.
But God, it's so now at the time of release.
Yeah,
It's out.
We don't know if it's any good actually,
or if we're getting a code even. We were
no
down.
Idea.
We asked for one and they said, "Okay, you're on the list."
You're on the list,
but that means nothing.
That could mean absolutely anything. That's just sort of like a Facebook like from Happy Birthday like means that I've seen it. I acknowledge, but no promises. No, we are in fact sponsored by our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump, where for as little as $1 per month, you can submit questions to this podcast. And there's loads of other tiers available as well. The support goes a long way and we really, really appreciate it. So please consider supporting us on there if you can. You got a question there?
Yeah, it's from Nexus Polaris, who says, "Heya Ben, Ashton, and also Peter of the Tiny Variety." Hello. "I've recently been downloading some MAME games." That's like multi-arcade, what does it stand for?
I
did look it up and I've forgotten. But it means it's like a...
It's an arcade emulator.
Yeah, that has like multiple arcades all on it. It's just an arcade emulator. Onto my Steam Deck. With such classics as Turtles Arcade, Simpsons Arcade, Gauntlet, etc. Which arcade cabinets would you personally have in your home if given the space and chance? I'd personally go for Mortal Kombat 2, Area 51, Moonwalker, and Marvel vs. Capcom 2, thanks to nostalgia. Make sure you follow, like, and subscribe.
Yes.
Keys, your boy NexiP.
We should say that
Thank
you, Nexus. We should say that the MAME emulator is perfectly legal because it is an emulator. However, ROMs are a bit more dicey unless you're ripping your own ROMs.
A crime.
So do follow the law and don't do crimes.
No, you can only use your MAME if you already have all of the physical arcade cabinets in your house.
You need to put it through the magical device where it goes on a conveyor belt. You load your arcade cabinet on its side on a conveyor belt. It passes through like an airport security.
Like an Acme machine.
Exactly, and then it comes out as a little USB stick that you copy the file on, and that's how it works.
Legal.
That's legal. The only legal way to do it.
Only way.
So I brought sort of two categories of arcade games. I've got the kind of the very old like 8-bit classics and then some stuff that I would play, I'd be more inclined to play now at an arcade, even though it's not what you typically associate. You know, it's not your Pac-Mans or your Pongs.
No.
It's your, whoa, 3D graphics.
Bloody hell.
Interesting peripherals. What?
Hate Pat.
So in the former category, I've always been quite a fan of Galaga, I say. Some people say Galaga.
I've never heard it Galaga before.
Haven't you?
I must say, no.
That's the debate, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah. So
I've only ever heard Galaga.
A lot of people say Galaga because it's like galaxy.
Right.
Again, and it's in space.
It's just a debate between Peter and
that's the debate.
It's a debate. It sounds like beer advertised for women.
Yeah, it does.
Gal Lager.
Gal Lager. Yeah.
I'd drink that.
Yeah. Apparently, there's a debate as to whether it's Galaga or Galaga. Most people do say Galaga, but okay. I've always been Galaga for some reason.
Hey, let us know in the comments. Is it Galaga or is it Galaga?
Yeah. But I've always been a fan of that. First time I played that, it was bundled at the start of Tekken, because it's a Namco arcade game. Tekken 1 on PS1 started with Galaga. Where you could, if you beat each round, it would just keep ticking over. It would keep playing. So that was a lot of fun. I also, weirdly, although it's very simple, I've always really liked Frogger. Don't know why. You know, I don't know why particularly I've latched onto Frogger and not, you know, Joust or Pac-Man or something. I don't like Pac-Man that much. I'll play one round of Pac-Man like everyone will, and then I'm done.
Yeah.
But Frogger, I find quite satisfying. But then in the more kind of recent category, I would definitely in my house have the proper like peripheral version of Star Wars Episode One Racer with the actual engine controls above your head.
Like this is Pod Racer.
Anakin's Pod Racer, yeah. I would probably have a Tekken of some sort, either Tekken 3 or Tekken Tag. Those are my favorites. And they always start in the arcades before they make their way to console. And I really like Crazy Taxi as well. I like arcade driving games where it's got that weird reactive steering wheel that spins by itself and pedals
to use.
Yeah. So, I mean, almost any driving game would do, to be honest. But I think Crazy Taxi has a nice kind of vibe to it. So probably that. Ashton, what would you have in your house?
Well, thanks for asking, Peter. I would like a Daytona. Yeah, I knew that was coming. With all the peripherals, so I could do a little driving game. I see people like someone I know has got the full like driving setup, like full like steering wheel and the screen that goes like round and the pedals.
For like F1 simulation games and stuff.
And I like, I don't want any of that. I just want little Daytona and my little beep beep.
The least comfortable seat in the entire world.
Yeah, rock and a sort of solid fake seat belt that you just pull around you.
For full immersion. And I would also like a House of the Dead game because they're fun and you never really get that far into them. So you never really know what the story is because you die very quickly.
True.
And you don't get to hear all the amazing voice acting.
No, exactly, because you're too busy getting murked.
Again, we really want to be... Sega, we'd love to be in the new House of the Dead
game. To be in it.
If you need some voice actors to go, what was that noise?
Whoa, was that a...
I can't believe... James,
zombie?
You're still alive? You must go and control the chaos in the city. If you want that, we can do that.
Yeah.
That is clearly...
our calling.
Clearly our calling.
Mm. Yeah.
If we're not busy doing Wells Interactive.
Yes.
Hey, we're really sought after.
Very full diary.
It's difficult to decide between the two, but I'll talk about Wells Interactive in a minute, actually.
And I would also just like... I like pinball, and I'd like a pinball game.
Mm. Which flavour of pinball?
Well, when we went to a bowling alley a little while ago, me and Peter's wife, Amy, spent about 10 minutes. Someone had put a pound in a pinball machine and they had left and there were still pinballs around.
Was that the Batman one?
No, it was a CSI one.
It was a CSI one. Right, okay.
And we spent ages just playing pinball. Oh, we had a great time. And I'm like, God, I just want pinball. Maybe I want a CSI pinball. Mm-hmm. Just because it's like, you go in and it had like a little like... spinny thing, like a science where they spin like a chemical around.
Oh, like
around.
A centrifuge. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, a centrifuge. Yeah. Thank you. And it had one of those in the middle of it, and it would spin your ball around. Whoa. And sling it off. And I was nice. Like, sick.
I hadn't thought about like physical games. I would probably also have air hockey if we're including stuff like that.
If we had a man cave.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
A massive one.
Yeah.
Because an air hockey table is big.
It's big. Mm. Air hockey's good.
Yeah.
It is good. I'm always scared I'm going to hurt my fingies. On.
Yeah. Or get my teeth knocked out. Yeah. Not that it ever comes off the ground, but like I just feel like that's going to come up and hit me in the face.
Yeah. Now that's it air is. Hockey. Mm.
Yes, real air hockey. I've got. Thank you, Ashton, for asking. Thank you, Ashton, for asking.
No problem.
I will tell you the ones that I've got written down here. I would have House of the Dead 4 is the one
specifically.
That, yes, that's the one I like. That's the one with the Uzi because it was in a bowling alley near where I grew up, and me and my friends used to play that quite a lot.
Right.
And it's the one where you, when enemies grab you, you have to like shake the Uzi from side to side to get them to get the zombies off, and it hurts your hand actually. It, like,
getting the zombies off.
Yeah,
it hurts
getting
your
the
hand.
Zombies off hurts your hand because it like pinches each side of your thumb and your finger. It's like and I always quite like that one. I always play House of the Dead 4 when I see it. I know it's not the classic one, but I enjoy that. Enjoy it. So I would like that one. I would also like Time Crisis 2 because everybody loves Time Crisis, and as far as I'm concerned, that's the best one. I don't really know a great deal about Time Crisis.
I think it's generally considered to be the best one.
Everyone loves
not
Time Crisis.
Not that I know anything about it either, but.
Guitar Hero Arcade. I can't play Guitar Hero, but for the sake of not having plastic peripherals all over the living room, it would almost be nice to have a permanent Guitar Hero station set up for people to play on. The Simpsons Arcade is one I would also like because I really like the Simpsons Arcade game, and it's one of those great arcade titles where four players can play on the same machine. It's got buttons for each of the characters, so you all have to sort of squeeze in, but you can all play at the same time, which is fun. And the last one I've got written down here is the Fast and Furious Superbikes, which, based on 2 minutes of Googling, may or may not be the arcade machine I put lots of pound coins into on a holiday when I was a teenager.
Well, you have the motorbike and it like goes to...
Yeah, you have to tilt. There's a few that are like that, but based on screenshots, I think it's this one that I played. And it's the first arcade game where I managed to get my name on a high score. Not very high, but it was on there. And my name is three letters, so it can fit on all high scores.
Lucky.
Which is really good.
That's useful.
Peter's so, just pet.
That's the ones that I would like in my house, please.
Those are good ones.
Yes, thank you.
Speaking of things we'd like to play, should we talk about things that we have played this week?
That sounds like a new and exciting section that I've
brand new section.
I've never heard of before.
I think we're calling it What We Playin'.
Okay.
It's What We Playin' time. Time to talk about the video games, what we have been playing over the past week or so. Peter, what have you been playing?
So, principally, mainly... Largely, I've been playing... I have been playing Forspoken, but I won't talk too much about that because we're going to do a little review corner on it in just a moment. But I also streamed it as well, so some of you will have seen my kind of in-the-moment reactions to some of it there, and I'll talk about, you know, some... There'll be some slightly more coherent thoughts in review corner. I've also, to be a bit coy, been playing a game that I can't really talk about right now. But all I'll say is it's kind of an indie thing, so it's not like a mainstream upcoming game.
It's Bread Space.
Yeah.
Rebate.
So don't even try and guess because you won't. But I won't be able to talk about that until like sometime in February. So sorry. I have played a little tiny bit of the game that I'm going to be streaming this coming week. So on Monday, I'll be streaming Psilocybil. It's also an indie game. Mm-hmm. It's this guy who has made... It's one of those where they've done it in like a PS1 rendering style, which I love.
Oh, lovely.
It's quite trendy now to do that.
Crunchy.
Lots of people are doing it. Yeah. And it's clearly like heavily inspired by Crash Bandicoot. The Crash Bandicoot trilogy. You play as like a mushroom boy. It's basically The Last of Us, really. It's nothing to do with The Last of Us. You are basically just a sentient mushroom. Instead of a head and face, you just have a mushroom cap on a neck.
That sounds lovely.
And you have to just platform through these very clearly Crash 1 inspired levels that are kind of very difficult at times. And it's in a lovely retro style. So I reached out to the guy and said, hey, if you could send me a code, I'd love to cover your game on our channel. And it's been in early access for a very long time, but it's only just been like fully released. Like the actual like proper version is now available on Steam. So I'll play that on Monday properly. I've not played enough to really do a review corner on it, but it would be nice to do maybe a brief review corner next week. So that's what I've been playing. Basically, I haven't really talked about any of them in particular for reasons, because one will be spoken about momentarily and the other two can't really say anything about right now. So that's what we've been playing. Ashton.
Well, I've been a bit sad boy this week, so I've not really wanted to play that much. But when I am sad, I play The Sims. And over Christmas, I walked by a house in Whitley Bay and I thought this house looks silly. So I took a picture of it and I built it in The Sims.
Wow.
And I've been, and it's like a series of houses. So there's like four or five houses. So every time I've been sad this week, I've booted up The Sims and I've like furnished one of the houses. And
ooh.
I've been like, cool. Okay, I'm done now. And then I turn my computer
off. What's in the houses? What have you
well, out? Currently I've done four out of five. Okay. And they all have different like people who live there. So one of them's like a couple that like met in college and he's like a contractor and she's like a marketing person and they're really basic and their house looks like real.
Do you get to give
bland.
Them backstories yourself or
I just,
these,
yeah,
these
just
are the backstories
me.
You've invented?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And then the second
one. You get
one,
to give them the basic trait though.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I haven't actually made the Sims that go in these houses. I've just made the houses.
Oh,
and
right.
Just made the story of my mind of like
I see.
What one okay. I've been decorating.
Are you
going like to
make the Sims for it eventually?
Well, or? I would, but I don't think I've actually got enough that you can only have eight Sims in a house, and because it's one lot,
so a couple of giant,
I wouldn't be able to have them. And then the second house is a lesbian couple with three kids. And then the third house is like a goth couple because their house is all like edgy and black and it's got like sick furniture and stuff. And then the fourth house I built is like a show home. And currently it's got like the same picture in like every room because
nice.
It's like they've been decorated. But I thought it was quite funny because when I was decorating that one, and this is just to myself, I was like, oh, it looks like the basic girl because she saw the show home and went, this house is perfect.
Yeah.
Right.
And then basically made
I
that
need
in
all
her
of the
house.
Furnishings
yeah.
For my house.
So that's what I did. And then I've also played some Plate Up because I like that game. And you can make dumplings in it at the moment because it's Chinese New Year.
Oh.
So we're making some dumplings.
Is it just temporary?
Well, there was a turkey over Christmas, and I think that maybe you can continue to make those going forward, but they've introduced dumplings, and it keeps giving you the option to do dumplings.
Do you have a photo of the silly house in Whitley Bay that we can see? I want to see how silly it is.
I might not have one on my on this phone because I had to reset it because I broke my other one.
Oh, no. That's okay.
I might do. I can have a look while Ben speaks.
Yeah.
And then also the last thing I played was some Jedi Fallen Order. And I got to the final boss fight. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, I'm fighting this person. And then I turned the game off because I thought, I can't do that right now.
Well, I need to replay that game again because I did actually try and replay it recently, but I didn't go all the way through. But I don't even remember who the final boss was. I don't think so. Yeah.
Well, I know, and I.
Oh yeah.
Haven't
no,
them.
I remember. Yeah, but
I haven't fought them
I don't.
Yet.
I don't remember.
Okay. What?
Yeah. Didn't want to spoil it.
In that location.
Yeah.
That one.
That one.
That place.
Bloody hell. This game sounds great. Why haven't we talked about this
but
before?
I really enjoyed playing it. I think it's quite fun. I enjoy having. I like Kyle Kestis. I don't know why you guys don't like him. I think he's fine. He's just doing his best.
It's not good enough.
I don't know
Do
why
better.
Everyone hates him.
Well, you also don't know why.
Hates him.
You're not like as much on the bandwagon of disliking Frey from Forspoken, are
no.
you?
No.
No.
They're fine. Whereas, I don't know everyone's mean to them all the time.
I mean, I am in that team. I don't think the clips that were like being crucified on Twitter are that bad, but like across the game, I do dislike her. But
anyway, I like Kyle Kestis and I am excited for the second game to come out. I quite like seeing the things that are appearing. And also, the woman who plays Seer in Jedi Fallen Order is in Forspoken. She played one of the judges.
Oh, yeah.
I saw one during our stream. I was like, hey, I know that
she's
face.
She's in a few video games with her actual face.
Yeah.
And it's
she's got
really,
a very recognizable face.
It's really weird. She I was did also think in that a trailer that... For a Tom Clancy game as well, I think.
Mm. I think she's in the she's in Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League.
Yes,
she's
she
playing
is.
Like.
Yeah, and
Viola
it's like,
Davis's
but you're
character.
In Fallen Order. You can't be here.
What
well,
are you doing here?
I know that face.
I must admit, when I did see that judge, I thought that she looked familiar, but I was like, I can't think. I was like, does she perhaps remind me slightly of Whoopi Goldberg, but because she's got similar hair in the as the judge. Mm. So, well, not I don't think Whoopi Goldberg has that hair now, but like the classic Whoopi Goldberg in her peak movie career hairstyle is similar to the judge. I was like, is that it? It's not really that there. I don't think it's her, but that's
her.
It'll be her.
Yeah,
yeah.
So that's why I played this week.
Well, that's a good selection of video games, Ashton.
Thank you.
You look for that funny house.
I am going to look for it. Oh, yes. I have. Here's the picture of the funny house. So it's like
four
houses.
That looks like a Sims house.
So that, it's
that's
funny.
A really bizarre.
Funny house. So I built that in the Sims.
There's definitely at least one basic person living in.
Yeah,
that
she
house.
Lives on the end.
Yeah, I mean in Whitley
yeah,
Bay.
In
yeah.
Okay. I have played this week Persona 3 Portable. I finally finished that. Mm-hmm. I basically got. I was trying to get as many trophies as I could in my first playthrough. There is, frustratingly, a trophy for finishing the game with both a female and a male protagonist. So you do need to play through the entire thing again.
Right.
From the other perspective. And that's for another day, quite frankly. But there's also these ridiculously hard mega bosses in there, which are optional. And they're in all Persona games. But these ones are just like, you need to follow a guide because if you... and you have to... it's ridiculous, right? Because if you do too much damage to this character or this boss at a certain amount of goes, you just get insta-killed. You have to have a calculator and make sure that you only do so much damage in so many goes, and then you can hit them with like a big attack.
That's actually a
it's
bit...
ridiculous.
And
like
that's
there's
not
no
a trophy,
way...
that's just part of the game.
That is a trophy. It's an optional thing. Right. So basically I've got a save file before right at the end of my playthrough where I think I'm in pretty much the best possible position to tackle this boss, but I just thought I cannot be asked for this right now. So I've got like 85% of the Persona compendium as well. So I'm pretty close to getting the platinum in that game pending another playthrough, which shouldn't be too hard if I just skip all the dialogue. Mm-hmm. But that's for another time. Really enjoyed that game. But, you know, go listen to our review discussion from last week for a more in-depth conversation about that. And also the stream, because I streamed it this week too. So you can see it in action if you want. I played a game from start to finish that I also can't talk about, frustratingly.
Oh.
And the embargo's up on Monday, which is really annoying, because otherwise it's just missed the cut for this podcast. We would have been able to talk about it here. But I will be streaming it on Tuesday. And then we'll be talking about it in depth next week in Review Corner.
We're so insufferable, aren't we?
Aren't we? Well, there's just too many games at the moment.
I did say insufferable there. It sounded like I said unsufferable. But I did say in.
I've not played any games I'm not allowed to talk about. I've just played games that are out.
Would you like
for
one?
Everyone.
Would you like one?
I'd love one.
Okay.
Maybe at some point.
Well, we'll see.
Hey,
next time.
Hey, it's okay. Peter's got two.
To be fair.
And I've
one, no, one of them I can talk about. I've just not played enough of it
to
talk about
you
it.
You were offered Forspoken.
Yeah. But
and
I knew
also
that
the one
to
that,
play
that I'm not allowed
yeah,
to talk
I didn't
about this
play
week.
That.
You didn't want to play it. So, you know, there will be the perfect game will come along, I'm sure. Anyway, outside of that, I had a little boys get together on the weekend just gone, and James Jenkins and Kieran Henry, who is the editor of this fine podcast, came over and we played a couple of games. We did Gang Beasts. We played Fall Guys. No, we didn't play Fall Guys. That's something I played the other night and I was rubbish at it. But one thing we did actually try, because I thought it would be absolutely horrible, is a Wales Interactive game that I've had downloaded for ages and I thought it was going to be one of their worst ones. Mm. It's not. It's one of their best ones in all the worst ways. It's called Dark Knights with Poe and Munro.
Oh my gosh, I've got that on my Steam.
Have
is that
you?
A Wales Interactive game?
Yeah, it's a spin-off from The Shapeshifting Detective. Right? And it's six chapters and they're all linear because I was afraid some of Wales Interactive's earlier stuff was... just go and talk to all these characters try and progress the plot if you want. Whereas I think the best ones are where it funnels you down linearly based on the choices you make. That is how this plays. And it is absolutely unhinged. The acting is horrible. It makes no sense. And we stopped at episode 3 because we thought, you know who would love this? Ashton Matthews. we need to wait until we can all get together.
I have that game.
And replay it from the beginning so we can all play through it. Because my God, I took a couple of screenshots of just like close-ups of character faces, and they're just like, it's just unhinged in what the best, treat. The most yeah, Wales Interactive way that. Possible. So we need to play that at some point because it's terrible and I love it. And that's pretty much all I played, apart from Fall Guys, which I did play earlier this week with a couple of friends, and I'm not very good at that game. So that was that.
Never mind.
That's what we're doing.
Well, should we talk about the thing that Peter wants to talk about, aka Forspoken, in this week's Review Corner?
I suppose we should. Let's do that.
And we're here. Welcome to the Review Corner. Peter, this time you are in the hot seat talking about Forspoken.
Yes.
The internet has, I think it's fair to say, not taken particularly kindly to the to the initial showings of Forspoken.
Yeah, I don't, and to a certain extent, I think people have kind of put the cart before the horse, really, and like they, fair enough. If you want to make a judgment based on a demo, that is partly what a demo is for. And you know, some people were playing the demo, saying, "I'm not sure about." I think the combat was one thing people were worried about. There are also people doing side by side like stills from like earlier reveal stuff and more recent stuff, and saying, oh, there's been a visual downgrade. And yeah, okay, maybe those are fair comparisons, but there was definitely an element of people jumping on a bandwagon saying this game is trash before they'd, certainly before they played the actual game, because it was chat that was happening before the release. And some of them, I imagine, didn't even play the demo and were saying, yeah, this game's trash. Someone made the point in the chat of one of my streams recently saying, I imagine a certain subsect of those people might be deciding that because of just the nature of the protagonist,
possibly.
Attributes of the protagonist. Other people for other reasons, I'm sure. But I've gotten into it already. I'm doing the review already. But
you put your cart before your horse.
I have. You set me off. But
sorry. Tell me about the game. What's happening?
Well, what's happening is that Square Enix sent us a code. Thank you, Square Enix.
Thank you, Square.
I want to say that first. So you play as Frey. She is an orphan. She was found in the Holland Tunnel in New York, I think. Don't test me on my American geography, but you're certainly in New York when the game starts. And she doesn't know her parents. She was passed through a few foster homes growing up and then just set out onto the mean streets as soon as she was able. And the game opens with you in court because you've been stealing again. You've got a bit of a record at this point. Okay. The judge is lenient and lets you out, and it's fortunate that she does, because you've actually been saving up a whole lot of cash. There's a big sports bag full of $100 bills that she's been saving up, and she's gonna get out of town and start a new life for herself. It's her birthday coming up. She's born around Christmas time. And she's like, a couple more days and I'm gone. Unfortunately, she's got into some trouble with the local gang who she's been doing some work for, and they burn down the apartment that she's been, it's like an abandoned apartment that she's been in, all of the money burns.
No.
So she is basically sitting on a bridge or a big sign. It looks like she's thinking of basically jumping off, because she's like, there's nothing left for me now. I've got, you know, but she decides, no, I won't. And in that moment, her attention is kind of drawn by this kind of, I can't really remember what it was now, but this little flying thing, like a bug or something, or a bird, or shiny. And as she follows it, she finds what she refers to as a cuff. It's like a kind of a gauntlet thing. You'll have seen it in the artwork. She pops it on, and suddenly she's in the world of Athia.
Okay.
And Athia is being, there's a kind of a corruption happening that's affecting various places geographically, and also the animals within that, and the people as well, turns them into zombies. And basically most of the residents are holed up in one city, and the people who used to lead Athia, the various regions of it, are kind of they've gone mad, basically. They've gone a bit evil, and so you're basically moving through. They're called Tantas. They're these women with like magical powers, and you've got to basically save the world. So that's the story.
Okay.
It starts with a lot of mystery. You don't know. You can tell that, like, Frey's origins are likely going to be explored in the game. Mm-hmm. And there's probably going to be some big reveals as the game goes on. I've not finished it yet. I've played probably 5 hours now, I think. Mm-hmm. And replayed the intro. I've played the intro twice because I streamed it. But yeah, so that's the setting and the story for the most part.
Okay.
Your cuff talks to you. Sounds a bit like Hugh Laurie. And that's where my biggest gripe with the game begins, really, is with the writing and the dialogue. So going into the game, based on some of the stuff that people were saying online, the things I was most worried about were whether there had been some sort of visual downgrade and, like, the performance associated with that as well, you know, whether it was going to chug if you had it on too high a setting. And also a lot of people who played the demo were saying to me that they weren't that into the combat and the controls. So you played it, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
How did you find that in the demo?
I was just left kind of feeling a bit flat about all of it.
Right.
Including the combat. But it may well have been just because it just threw you in.
Yeah. So I went in thinking, well, if there are going to be problems here, those might be the problems that I have. Mm. And actually, surprisingly, I think it looks great. I've got it on ray tracing mode. I say great. I mean, it's not like it's not going to win awards for visuals of the year sort of thing. But I think it looks good. Looks fine. Okay. I have had a little bit of a performance issue in some areas where there's a lot of combat going on, a lot of particle effects and stuff. It does seem to drop some frames, which is not good. But yeah, I certainly don't think there's been a graphical downgrade, even if that is at the expense of the performance. And I actually really like the combat. I think it's one of those games where you feel like a badass without having to do very much. Mm. So it's kind of got a bit of a God of War effect or a Spider-Man effect where, yeah, even if you're just doing basic attacks, the animation of those attacks involves you flipping the hell all over the place. Right. And, you know, it can be quite easy to take down certain enemies. I am admittedly playing it on story mode at home. But when I streamed it, I had it on the default balanced mode. And that seemed relatively straightforward as well. It's not a grind, the combat, which is something I don't like in modern games where a single enemy takes, you know, a couple of minutes each to take down.
Yeah.
So combat and visuals, I'm fine with. But I have to basically agree with what has now almost become a bit of a meme online with the way this game is written. I find Frey just wholly unlikable or largely unlikable. I think, to be fair, some of the clips that were going around to demonstrate the how kooky and weird the writing was, I don't think they're some of the worst examples, actually. I think the one where she's saying, I moved that with my freaking mind. And there's one where her and the cuff are doing impressions of each other saying, that's what you sound like. Mm. Both of those, I think, all right, they're not great, but they're okay.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit unfair to crucify a game based on those. But actually, there are other things in the game that are way more annoying. She swears constantly.
Yeah.
I don't mind a bit of swearing. I do swearing occasionally on stream when I shouldn't do. People know that I'm not, like, prudish in that sense that, like, all swearing is bad. But I think if you're just swearing all the time, it kind of just loses its effectiveness.
Right.
And she sounds like a kind of angsty kid who's, like, her parents have gone out for the night. And so she's going to sit around and say flip in the house.
Whoa.
Because she can.
Okay.
So there's that aspect I don't like. And I also just... So you can turn off... you can turn the combat chatter to a minimum, which I think a lot of people are doing. It's not the frequency that bothers me. It's the actual content of it. You know, I don't mind if they're going to talk a lot through the game.
Yeah.
But it is just this sort of, like, angst. It's memey. People are saying Iron Man has a lot to answer for, you know, like the kind of the Marvel hero effect.
Right, okay.
Where it's like, yeah, I'm in this dangerous situation, constantly. But I'm just quipping all the way through.
Yeah.
And Kieran, one of our editors, told me before I played the game that he'd played the demo. I think he played the demo, or he'd seen, an hour of gameplay was leaked, wasn't it, before the game was launched from the beginning. And in the opening segment of the game, Frey's being beaten up by the criminal gang that she's run into. And it's, like, really brutal. Like, one of them, like, properly, like, clocks her in the head, and I think her head smacks against this concrete wall. Oof. And she just, like, looks back at them and says another quippy thing. Like, she's just saying stuff to piss them off.
Right.
And it's like, I don't care how streetwise and like independent you are. Mm. If you're getting laid into by three people who are bashing your head against a concrete wall, you wouldn't continue to goad them. Mm. But because she's like, hey, this like hero that you really want to, you would love to be friends with in real life because she's so witty. That's what she does.
Mine.
Okay. So I don't think I'm going to be playing much more of the game. I don't think I'm going to get through it because I've given her time for her character to develop, and she just continues to be this kind of angsty teenager, which is a shame.
That is such a shame. How do you feel generally about the story, not just in terms of, because as you alluded to, I imagine you're uncovering some stuff about Frey's background, but what you're doing in Athia and the world there, is it interesting? Is the world interesting? Are the people interesting?
It's not uninteresting, but it's not actually that original. I think it's quite easy to pick up, like, to just throw a bunch of sort of fantasy tropes into a mix and then maybe paint a semi-unique veneer on them and say, this is our interpretation of this thing, but this thing is something that you've actually seen quite a lot in a lot of fantasy games. Now, I couldn't necessarily pick on this game in particular for doing that, because by definition, if I'm saying it's a bit samey and it's a bit done, then other people have been doing it as well. So this isn't like a sin that is unique to this game. But yeah, it's nothing special, really. There's a corruption moving through the world. You know, no, that's something we've seen before in games. There are these like powerful Tantas who you go up against. And yeah, all right, there's some intrigue around Frey's backstory, but if I'm not like actually forming an attachment to Frey as a character, then I'm not exactly going to be invested in finding out what has happened to her in her past. I'm maybe just like somewhat interested into like how she actually magically ended up in this world to begin with and how she's going to get out, but even then I imagine it's just going to be not hand waved away, but just say, you know, this is the magic system that happens in our world, and this is how you ended up here, and here's how you get back. So yeah, it's not got a really, it's not got a USP really as a story. It's nothing is like particularly hooking me in, and unfortunately some things are pushing me away, including the writing. So that's a real shame. Gameplay wise it's fun. I like the combat, and of course I've not even touched on, I'll wrap it up now, but there are sort of the things you would expect to have in an open world fantasy RPG. So there are various map markers that you can go and wander off the beaten track and do all sorts of things, collecting things and working your way through, clearing enemies out of certain areas and all that sort of thing. There are sort of boss style creatures you can encounter as you're wandering along. So you'll just be in the wilderness, and there'll be like quite early on, you'll encounter this giant deer that I found too tough to defeat. So it's like, okay, I'll come back and do that later, which is good. Gives you a sense, a reason to come back and to explore the world. And there's like various unique things you can do to level your character. There are skill trees. You can craft and upgrade items. And also there's this like nail mechanic where she paints runes onto her nails.
Okay.
And you collect the certain patterns as you go around the world, and so you can apply one to one hand and one to another and kind of combine them and you know create your own sort of build, and they'll just give you various upgrades and abilities and stuff. So that's something that
it's pretty unique.
Yeah, you're painting your nails, but again, like fundamentally it's still just attach this attachment kind of thing. It's presented as nail art, which is an interesting take on it, but ultimately you're just equipping a thing that you found in the world. So depends how jaded you are, I suppose, as to whether you think that counts as unique or not.
So is there a group of players that you would recommend this game to that might enjoy it, or is it just generally across the board maybe just avoid this one?
To me, to use a slightly dated comparison, the things that I like about this game and the things I dislike about this game map on quite well to Dragon's Dogma.
Okay.
In that it's got a nice open fantasy world, which is quite pretty at times. And the combat is very fun. I really like the combat in Dragon's Dogma. But what I didn't like in Dragon's Dogma was your protagonist was actually mute, so it's a different problem, but it's someone you can't really form an attachment to. Mm-hmm. And the story was kind of complex, and it felt maybe a little bit bloated at times. So if you happened to like Dragon's Dogma for kind of all that it was, like warts and all, then I imagine you might like this game, you know, in spite of its flaws. I don't know why that game in particular, like, I think maybe just the setting, I guess, is why I formed that kind of comparison in my mind as I played. But yeah, I think if you like that game, maybe give Forspoken a go. And as always, the best thing to do is to maybe find some footage online, someone who's playing the first hour or so, and just have a look at that and try and form a judgment based on that. Yeah, probably not for me. I don't think I'm going to finish it. Mm-hmm. I've given it a good go. But, you know, there's a lot coming out end of January, early February. So it might have to take a back seat now, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, yeah. It's available right now on PlayStation 5 and PC.
And PC as well. Yeah, it is. So a couple of options there. So fingers crossed, some of you out there, it will be for you, but not quite for me, unfortunately. It was one of the ones I was looking forward to this year at the tail end of 2022, but it's not had the best start, unfortunately.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
Mm. Wonderful. Well, thanks, Ben.
Thank you, Peter.
Should we go back to the podcast?
Let's do it.
Okay. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Peter.
Ashton, would you like to ask a question?
I would. This comes from Bartek. Triple bap. I finally finished Xenogears. With a clear conscience, I can say that I completely understand the cult around it and worship. What a philosophical and emotional journey. Best of all, one hero has a name like me. As you can guess, he is super handsome, charismatic, and humble. So the question for all of Triple Jump and Walruses is, how do you feel when a character in a game has your name? Your weeb, Bartek. Thank
you, Bartek. I did a quick Google, and I think the character is called Bart, I think. Yeah. So I was like, oh, is there a character called Bartek? I think they're Bartholomew, short for Bart. Or at least there is a Bart somewhere in the franchise. I don't know. I'm not sure. But so we were all trying to think of characters who have our names.
Mm. I didn't bother thinking because I know there isn't any.
Okay.
Yeah. It's really hard to Google character.
Ben video game.
Yeah, it's really hard.
Yeah.
Because your mind goes completely blank. Mm. There are a few, but outside of actual existing licensed properties like Star Wars or Marvel and all that kind of stuff that happen to have games around them, there are very few original video game characters with our names. As far as we could tell, there'll be people who can offer up examples, I'm sure.
And there's perhaps like the odd NPC in Fallout because they all have like, you know, non-fantasy names. So you do get your Bens and your Peters and your Johns and your...
Those were the Richards. Best though, because you would go onto the Fallout wiki and Google Ben and the three characters, there's like, there's a photo of the character and it's a charred skeleton.
Yeah, mine was as well.
Just find in a room.
Pincushion Peter. It's a skeleton with like six axes in his back up a mountain. but what I came up with, other than Marvel characters, so Peter Parker and Peter Quill, was Pete from Bully. Well, I'd say I came up with it. Was it you, Ashton? Came
no,
up with
it was not me.
Someone suggested. James?
Alex?
Someone did. So I do remember Pete from Bully, but I mean, I didn't feel any like particular connection or disconnection to him. And I think broadly, to answer the question, how do I feel when a character in a game has my name? I don't think it actually affects me that much. I don't think I get like any more into it or less. You know, people have always, well, not always, but occasionally like said, oh, Peter Parker to me, like if we're talking about Spider-Man or whatever. And I don't sort of feel like, oh yeah, he's got the same name as me. That's really cool. That's just his name. I think perhaps if I had a more unusual name, not that there are that many Peters, but there are a fair few, then perhaps if suddenly you encountered someone like, oh, wow, like this person's actually got my name. Like if an Ashton came along, particularly a female Ashton, you might think like, oh, this is kind of interesting.
How exciting.
Don't want to speak for you, but like, you know, it's like an unusual, it would be an unusual thing for you.
It would feel the same to me as it did when I was a child, when everyone would go and get personalized key rings with their names on it. And I'd look for A and I'd be like,
Bort.
No.
Bortek.
It's like Alex or Ashley. And I'm like, no, that's not my name. And then eventually when they were like, Ashton's appearing, I was like, oh my God, Ashton's fine. I can finally have a key.
They're all written in blue because they're boy ones.
They're boy names. Yeah.
Oh, no. I don't think it really necessarily makes me feel more immersed or connected to a character. I'm just in it for how they're written and whether they say silly things or not.
I think if I saw a character, I'd be really excited. If they were like, here's the main character of this game, she's called Ashton, I'd be like, oh my God.
I think I'd be excited.
I need that game. Yeah, I need that game. But it's never really happened to me because I have a stupid name. But if I can name my own character, like if I can name my protagonist, I still don't give it my name.
No, I don't.
I'll pick a completely random name or like give it a stupid name rather than giving it my name, because most of the time if I'm playing an RPG where it's like my character is created, normally I will give that character a name that is not mine because it's not me playing. It's like I'm pretending to be someone else. Because they always have stupid. Like, I also think it's funny if you're going into a story game and it's like, hi, Buttface, thank you for coming to my rescue. Like, that's funny than just saying, hi, Ashton, thanks for coming to my rescue. But I do, like, if I saw a character with my name, I'd be as excited as Bartek was about seeing a character with his name. I just think it's neat. I know that you guys have got basic names, so you probably see people with your name all the time, but... Well, I've only ever met one other Ashton. Really? When I was a child. When I was like a teenager, a child moving across the street from me who was called Ashton. Wow. And I'd never met anyone else with my name. And then suddenly there's a woman down the street shouting my name at her son. And I was like, who's shouting my name? Like, what is happening? And I'm coming out the door like, yes.
Me? Me?
Hello? And then she like grabs his kid and she's like, Ashton,
sorry,
stop misbehaving.
My son is also named Ashton.
And I was like, what are the chances of that? And then one time we were both in the local doctor's surgery and he said my name, and the woman was like, oh, you called Ashton too? And I was
that's crazy.
Yeah, I have a boy name.
There's only one real character that I could find based on the suggestion of our team. That actually has my name that isn't a licensed character. There's a Pokemon Ranger Guardian Signs character called Ben, apparently.
Right.
There's all the Ben 10 games, of which there are many. Ben Drowned, the creepypasta for Majora's Mask.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Majora's Mask. Ben Quadrinaros from Star Wars Episode
Quadrinaros.
Really?
Quadrinaros, yeah.
Quadrinaros. It says Quadrinaros.
I don't know if we trust Peter with pronunciation.
Star Wars characters.
It might just be a typo.
I think it's Quadrinaros or Aros, yeah.
There's Ben in there. Mm. He's an alien man. He's in Star Wars Episode 1 Racer. But the main one is Ben Paul from The Walking Dead Season 1, the Telltale game, who's like the high school student who's a bit of a coward and keeps... He means well, but keeps making mistakes that put everyone in danger.
Mm.
And he kind of pisses me off. I didn't think anything of the fact that he had my name beyond, oh, cool, he's got my name. That's cool.
But do you not think, like, when you were saying in Fallout, when it was quite funny that the skeleton, like, had your name?
Yeah.
Do you not think that that's, like, if you came across that skeleton and it was, like, Ben above its head, do you not, like, you'd probably laugh at that because it had your name?
Maybe so. Maybe so, yeah.
Like the way that you, like, if you just saw a skeleton with a bunch of axes in its back, you probably wouldn't laugh. But because it's called Pincushion Pete, and because your name is Peter, it's then funny because
maybe.
It's got your name.
Possibly. I think it'd be, I'd find it funnier if it was just called Pete or Peter. If it's like Pincushion Peter, that like immediately gives it a whole personality that I don't
apart
associate
from
it's with
just
me.
Child skeleton Ben.
But if I just found a child skeleton that said Ben or Peter, my mind might initially go, oh, it's like if I was dead. That's me.
I'm dead.
I love the fact that, you know what? I get more excited when I see my friends' names in games. In particular, Borderlands 2, where there's a tiny loader bot and there's wanted posters all over the game for Jimmy Jenkins.
Jimmy Jenkins.
Yeah. Which is amazing, considering James Jenkins is someone who we know well in real life. So whenever I see the Jimmy Jenkins posters, I get a real kick out of those. I think they're hilarious.
Yeah.
But Peter, you're the only one out of the three of us that could probably speak to what it's like to play a game where a protagonist actually has your name and they're saying your name. When they say, hey, Peter, do you go, yes?
Every time, sorry.
What are the chances?
Well, Spyro the Dragon was nearly called Pete the Dragon, which I don't know if he'd been called Pete the Dragon, I might have, in a way, sort of like resisted that game a bit more.
Really?
Because it might have been a bit weird that, like, They're always saying my name. And like, if people found out that I really liked Pete the Dragon.
Hi, I'm Peter and I love Pete the Dragon.
Yeah, they might have thought, right, you okay, you big baby.
Pete the Dragon.
Yeah.
And you've embroidered an R on the end.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, yeah, I might have thought like, oh, people will think I just like him because he's called Pete. So it's probably just as well that they didn't call him that. Mm. Otherwise, well, they also would have got in legal trouble. I think they changed it because of Pete's Dragon. There was like a right. film called Pete's mm. Dragon.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I've heard of that. Well, there we are. We don't really care is the answer, unfortunately. Not. Can't
I
say
would.
We've ever made a real connection with them, but Ashton would care a lot.
Yeah, I would.
Jimmy Jenkins is gaming royalty, mm-hmm. quite frankly. Well, it's time to move on to something a little unusual, a little bit of Monica in my life. Mm. It's weird news time. Mm.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It's weird news time. Time for some weird video game news. If you want to submit weird video game news to us, of course, send it to us on Twitter and Facebook. There's a post that goes out at the start of the week. There's a chance yours could be picked and you get a shout out right here in the weird news section. If you want to guarantee a shout out in the weird news section, though, you need to go to patreon.com/teamtriplejump, support us at a certain tier and become a podcast producer just like...
Nathan.
G.Y. Goliath.
Nexus Polaris.
Duncan Wilson.
Nicole Hansen.
Ellie Nicholas.
Erica Hutchinson.
Meldy Elbonet.
Katie Garrett.
And Gabrielle Philipping.
Thank you, podcast producers. Peter, what's your weird news?
I've got a weird
today?
News here that was submitted by Connor Mulcahy. I think it's Conroy Milk. That's easier to pronounce. It's according to Kotaku. Oh. I just rejected cookies and it closed the tab. hang on.
If you won't have my cookies, you won't get me at my article.
War Thunder players are once again posting military documents on forums.
I don't know
if it's going to be in this article, but I saw on Twitter that someone had been asked... In their security job application, do they play War Thunder? And they were like, no.
Someone was a referee for one of their friends who was getting a job at
the US government or something.
Yeah. Some sort of military.
So they rang them up and they're asking, you know, like, are they reliable and what's the all these things? And then
do they play War Thunder? yeah.
Right.
But why has that reputation been earned, Peter?
Mm. Well, yeah, this is an update to a story we've covered in the past. But here we go. Maybe they should change the game's slogan to "Can't Stop, Won't Stop," says Luke Plunkett.
Brilliant. Well done, Luke.
Good one, Luke.
Good job, Luke.
You may remember that one of the funniest stories of 2022, according to Luke Plunkett.
It was so funny.
Was the way that players of War Thunder, an arcadey online shooter featuring real military vehicles, just kept on posting military documents in the game's forums, not as acts of espionage, but to win arguments about specs. The last time we checked in on these guys, it was some tank players who, despite ban after ban, just kept on sharing detailed classified information on currently operational main battle tanks and their armaments. So these are people who have access to those documents because of their position, I guess, or their job, or maybe they've found them like
in another forum
with bad means, illicit means. And they're arguing about, like, this tank's better than that tank. And they say, I'll prove it to you. And they post this document that should not be posted on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Why does this tank not have a higher armor rating than this tank?
Yeah.
Look, here's evidence as to why.
Here's how you would destroy the tank in an actual military situation.
Yes, here's its weak spot. This week, we've seen a similar thing happen. Only now, it's about fighter aircraft. As Massively OP report... Earlier this week, a player shared military documents relating to the F-16 fighter jet in order to win an argument. The problem is that those documents, while not designated as classified military documentation like the tank guy's stuff, were still restricted material, quote, under the jurisdiction of the International Traffic in Arms Regulations, ITAR. A State Department enforced law that limits disclosure and transmission of U.S. weapons data and information to foreign individuals, including distribution on the internet. So, not classified, but still not the kind of thing you should be posting in a video game forum. Then, just a day later, someone else was at it again. This time, a different user posted excerpts from over a dozen weapon system manuals for the F-15E. Again, these weren't classified. Indeed, they were for systems old enough that they had been... Indeed, they were for systems old enough that they had been declassified. But like I've already said, just because something isn't classified doesn't mean you can freely post it on the internet forums where anyone in the world can see them. So they were deleted as well. I said this last year, but I will say it again now. The fact that a video game's forums have become one of the greatest OPSEC hazards of the modern age just because some dudes want to argue over a weapon statistics is very funny. Thanks, Luke.
That's now the funniest story of 2023.
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
Next year when it happens again. Remember the funniest story of 2022 and 2023? Oh boy, do
I. That people were posting documents that aren't actually classified this time.
Mm.
Slightly less funny.
Yeah.
Still pretty funny, though.
I have some weird news. Yeah. It comes from Arby at r_b84 on Twitter. Mm. From Kotaku by Zach Zweizen. Real soldiers use Metal Gear Solid tactic to defeat military robot. I think Solid Snake and Metal Gear Solid creator Hideo Kojima would approve of this tactic. Mm. There's a lot of guff in this article, so I am going to skip past bits.
Okay.
Cardboard boxes are very useful. You can use them to move stuff, create large elaborate forts out of them, and probably other things too.
Webster's Dictionary defines cardboard box as...
place where cat lives.
Yes. But did you know that you can use a cardboard box to hide from a highly advanced military robot? It's true, even if it sounds like something straight out of a video game. And then it explains what Metal Gear Solid is and how in that game you can hide under a box from enemies.
Yeah.
And that's basically all you need to know.
Never really worked for me. They would always just kick the box over.
Yeah, I just shot everyone.
Saw me moving or something.
It turns out this tactic actually works in real life against AI-powered robot, which, yes, sounds like a Metal Gear Solid thing, but it's actually something that exists in the real life world, in our real life world. The Economist defense editor, Shashank Joshi, posted an excerpt from an upcoming book about artificial intelligence in the military. In it, the author of the book, Paul Scher, shares a story about the US military used a group of Marines to improve an AI robot's human detection algorithm. To do so, Marines walked around the robot for a few days while engineers used the data to improve the AI. But eventually, someone decided to flip things and asked the soldiers to try and defeat the AI robot instead of helping it. And then there's some excerpts from a book taken just in a picture.
Good.
The 8 Marines parked the AI robot in the middle of a traffic circle and played a game. Whoever could reach the robot from a long distance away without being detected won. All 8 Marines were able to do so. Some did cartwheels, throwing off the robot's detection algorithm.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah. Another pretended to be a tree.
Yeah. You have to hide your Wilson while you do them.
Yeah. Another pretended to be a tree, using branches and slowly moving towards the robot, smiling the whole time. But perhaps the best tactic used by the Marines was hiding under a cardboard box. Apparently, two different Marines shared a single cardboard box and hid under it while moving towards the robot. You could hear them giggling the whole time, said a person in the book referred to as Phil. As explained in the book, the AI system was trained to spot humans walking and running, not people doing somersaults or hiding in boxes. So these fairly simple and childish tactics worked and fooled the AI. Meanwhile, any average person would have easily spotted a moving box or a flipping soldier, showcasing a major issue with the AI and its reliance on previous data and algorithms. Soldiers defeated robot AI using cardboard boxes and silly gymnastics moves. Silly gymnastic moves sounds like a plot point from Metal Gear Solid game. Mm-hmm. Just one more thing Kojima predicted, I guess.
Yeah. Do you think when they were tasked with, you know, get past this AI robot, do you think either one of them was actually a Metal Gear Solid fan, perhaps?
I don't know. We could do what Snake does.
Get in a box.
The future of warfare is it's going to be funny.
Yeah.
That's what I've learned today.
It's going to be the funniest warfare of 2023.
The next war will be the funniest war.
Yeah.
We'll look back on it and go.
I would like to been there and just seen this cardboard box with like two giggling grown men like hiding underneath it, or the man just hiding as a tree.
Smiling the whole way.
My weird news comes courtesy of at LeloidW90 on Twitter. Thank you, at LeloidW90 on Twitter. And I think this is a Kotaku triple whammy.
Whoa.
Yes, thank you. Some people may have seen this as a something of a collector myself. It was quite hard to look at. A lot of people were very upset about this. Pokemon fan says U.S. Customs destroyed $4,000 classic game. An original sealed copy of Pokemon Yellow, reportedly worth nearly $4,000, was ruined by US Customs and Border Control after its seal was not only cracked, but its case broken and the front of the box sliced clean off in a wanton display of aggression against collectibles, the owner claims. That owner, who goes by the Master of Unlocking, told Kotaku he was disappointed to see such senseless damage.
It's Jill.
Yeah.
To see such senseless damage done to the now ruined collector's item. There's an auto-playing video that's taking up half the screen. Oh!
You clicked on the video.
I didn't. I tried to close it. No. I hate websites. The Master of Unlocking's friend, Night Dive Studio CEO Stephen Kick, Mr. Kick, tweeted a picture showing the ruined Pokemon Yellow copy on January the 19th. Don't worry, it can autoplay a video, but it won't embed an image that we need to see that's pivotal to the article. Let's have a look.
Slice the front off.
Yeah, I'll show you. It's real. Here we are.
Really minced it.
Look at the state of that. They've cracked the grading case open and then just sliced the front of the
Why did they think they were?
They opened it with a katana inside. Or something.
I don't know. They didn't study the blade very well. That's for sure. A friend of mine received this sealed and graded original copy of Pokemon Yellow. Kick said U.S. Customs broke the acrylic case, ripped and discarded the seal, and sliced the front of the box off. Maybe they weren't fans of Water Games. Yes, Water Games is an independent company that grades and certifies games for collectors. There we are. There's the clarification. Chances are you'll encounter Water Games if you're looking for high-quality mint copies of old games. The company was responsible for grading and certifying the Master of Unlocking's copy, giving it an A-plus rating and a score of 9.2.
I don't know if it's going to get that anymore.
According to Water Games' website, the game is in exceptional condition and worth $3,800. Or it was, until US Customs came through and decimated the certification. Well, I do know that if you traded in the yellow cartridge at CEX, it'd maybe get £15 cash.
Okay.
So you've not lost everything.
It's not a total loss.
It's not a total loss. So either they hated the battery inside the cartridge, or they thought it had contained drugs or something. Can US Customs just destroy things without recourse? Asked another tweeter, with many others demanding consequences against the agency.
When will you learn? When will you learn?
It goes on and on. There's all sorts of sources there. It's worth a read if you want to feel a bit upset and angry about a classic game being destroyed.
Do you think you can get compensation? Do you think you can get $4,000?
Insured.
I was looking into this. Apparently the insurance tends not to cover what happens in customs, which is kind of shocking.
Wow.
And usually when people have problems with customs, it's sort of like the Spider-Man meme where they're both pointing at each other.
Yeah.
But it's customs and then the postal service who are responsible for it. They're like, what's their fault? And you go around in circles and you don't get anything.
The only safe way to get your games is to drive to the headquarters and get it yourself and then drive back. No matter how far away it is, you must drive.
Yeah.
Or make knives illegal. And then no one can cut them open.
Or can we just get rid of customs? Just let people ferry whatever they like.
Yeah. We ain't nothing but mammals. Let us just walk across into another country.
Let me get on a plane with a gun. Just let me.
Let me go to Europe with no passport. And let me just go between the free travel is basically what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You want free travel in Europe?
I want to get rid of borders.
As a Brit.
I want borderless travel in Europe and I want to be able to sort of go wherever I want.
Madness.
I want to be able to stand in the line that says everyone else and not stand in the separate line where we have to get
I don't want to be in the sad line anymore.
No, I want to be
in the fast moving nice line.
Well, I want blue passports. So
well, you've already got them. So
yeah.
Anyway, that's how Pokemon Yellow was destroyed.
Mm.
The end. Let's have another question.
Yeah, it's from Amelia_01. Thank you, Amelia. Hey, Abap, what game do you wish became a series or a series that got cut short that you would like to see another installment of? Love from Amelia. Kiss, kiss.
Kiss, kiss.
Thank you, Amelia. Sorry for being so rude there. So I have got some of both. You know, a game that never had any sequels or one that did have some and should come back.
Haven?
Well, I'll get Beyond Good and Evil and Haven out of the way. Mm-hmm. They both ended on cliffhangers that may never be resolved. Haven won't ever be resolved. Although it was a biblical allegory, so maybe I just need to read the Bible to find out what happened.
The next chapter's been waiting for you for thousands of years.
Yeah, it was written just in a cave, like in Bethlehem or something.
Yes, that's where they wrote it.
Yeah, in that cave in Bethlehem.
Yeah.
Bible cave, you know.
So Bible cave. Those two go without saying, I'm sure. So I've got games here that never had a sequel. Talked about it earlier, actually. Bully, or in the UK, Canis Canem Edit, because we weren't allowed to call it Bully. But for some reason, they picked the slogan of the school in Latin rather than, they could have just called it Bulworth Academy. Yeah. That would have been a much better name. But no.
Yeah.
But that was a really good game. Rockstar, GTA style thing, but in school. And there's been talk for a long time about maybe they're doing a sequel. It might be a university or it might just be back at a school again. Who's to say? But nothing official at the moment. Diddy Kong Racing, very underrated kart racer. And I would have loved to play more of that. There was, I think, a Donkey Kong racer or some kind of spiritual successor on like the DS or something. I don't know my Nintendo very well, but it was mostly, instead of all the like unique colorful characters, there was like Conker and Banjo. That was some of their first appearances, I think. And there was like a tortoise and a badger. In the spiritual sequel, it was mostly just the Donkey Kong family, you know, like what are they called? Funky Kong and Girly Kong, Grandma Kong.
Yes.
All those ones. King Kong.
Yeah.
So that's less exciting. Give me that interesting roster. And then now onto some series that should come back. Tomba only had two games. Mm. Everyone's clamoring for a sequel in the Tomby community. They'll never get it. I think Whoopi Camp, who developed it, were sort of closed down or absorbed or something after the second game, even though I think there was an intention to make a third game.
If they do a third one, they should only print 3,000 copies,
and
then they'll all go on eBay for hundreds of dollars.
Imagine how much money they would make.
Just like the first two.
Yeah. Time Splitters, of course, which should
apparently
be coming back, apparently,
happening.
Maybe. And at least they got a good innings with three games, whereas
only two of them are worth playing, though.
That's true, yeah. And then likewise, Dino Crisis did actually have several games, and the reason that Dino Crisis died out or went extinct, was because there was a dip in quality, so I'm told. I've not played the third Dino Crisis, but apparently it was on a downward trajectory.
Mm.
But if Capcom had just treated Dino Crisis like they've treated Resident Evil and powered through some of the duds, and if it was, you know, still being made today the way that Resident Evil is being made, imagine what we'd have. Imagine the quality. There's still hope as well that that will come back, or at least get one of the Capcom like RE engine remakes. So fingers crossed. But those are some that I would like to see more of.
Excellent.
Ashton.
There was only one game that I think got the short end of the stick and set itself
in,
up.
Or in the history of gaming?
Not in the history of gaming. Okay. Just that I could think of.
Right.
And my brain's not that big, so there's loads. And there's only one game that I could think of that I was like, man, this game really got shafted and it deserved to at least have the prospect of getting a sequel, but it was told no pretty much immediately after release. As Guardians of the Galaxy, I think it was a really good game after I got through the bit where I didn't like it for a while.
Have they actually said they're not doing a sequel to that? I didn't know that.
I also was not aware that they
were. I Googled it because I was like, I thought I'd heard news about this, but I think they said that they had outwardly cancelled making a sequel of it because they were so unhappy with how badly it performed.
Yeah, sold millions of copies and won awards. Yeah. Can you imagine?
Until you said that, I thought, well, that's a shoe-in for a sequel.
I thought so too, but I Googled it and it said no.
I believe you.
It's flipping Square Enix, isn't it? And it's a Western studio and who knows what the license is.
They probably don't want to touch Marvel again.
So
it said... Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy developer Eidos Montreal has reportedly cancelled a new game.
No.
So
that is rubbish if true.
Yeah.
Not a fan of that.
So I think, you know, they kind of set themselves up to be able to make a sequel and have a really interesting story. But they'll never get that.
They'll never get
sad face.
It's very sad face. Mm. And I like the first game a lot.
Yeah.
Never mind. Mm. Mine are Guardians of the Galaxy. Mm. And also, I'd like another Demon's Souls, please.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of Dark Souls out there.
Bloodborne? Is that not
and
on the
Bloodborne,
list?
Well, yeah, I mean, another Bloodborne too. That's a very good point, actually. Yeah, I mean, they are functionally similar games, but I mean, I'd like a direct sequel to them, please. Mm. I'd like a Demon's Souls 2. I'd like a Bloodborne 2. I would like all of them, please. Thank you very much. And the other one, which is a bit of an outlier, not the greatest received game in the world, but one that we've talked about quite highly on this show before, especially in terms of its presentation was very nice, and also it has a very intriguing story, and that's The Order 1886.
Yeah, I nearly put that down. Yeah.
I think it's a real shame because that game ends on a cliffhanger and I was really gripped by the story of that game and very intrigued by the alternative history world that they created. It's just a shame that it was buggy and not hugely inspired gameplay-wise. And also, I think, as we've spoken about before, that studio has since been purchased by one of the big companies, maybe Meta, maybe... like a mobile game conglomerate. I'm not entirely sure. Anyway, they're not Ready at Dawn is the studio. Then they won't be allowed anywhere near it anymore. However, I think Sony still owns the IP, so they could give it to someone.
It's funny that you mentioned that because this morning I was looking to see if they'd finally announced the PS Plus games for next month, which they have not. But someone was predicting that game would be was part of next month's PS Plus.
Really?
Which is weird that you've said that because I was like, why am I...
They sometimes do that before they more before they release sequels rather than announce sequels. Normally, it's for games that are already.
It could be a test the waters kind of thing, you know, like how do people receive
it's not
it? But
confirmed,
also,
but it was a prediction that someone had made.
People will be annoyed by that because it's a very old game at this point, and it's not very expensive. The joke at the time, because it was the Forspoken of its day, was that it's not worth. I'm not buying it until it's £18.86.
I'm not buying it till it's £4 and oaken pence.
Four spinnies. It's way cheaper than 1886 now. So, but that was a good game that I liked, and I would love to see it followed up.
I'm actually surprised that it's not available for free on one of the tiers of.
Is it not?
Well, maybe it is, but the fact, like, if they're going to add it to Plus, like, typically
it might be an extra or premium situation.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know.
Yeah, lucky them. Wouldn't know, not in that club. So.
No,
me neither.
Can't get in. They won't let me in because I won't pay for it. is it time to move on?
To the big discussion.
Oh. It's big discussion time. Time for the big video game discussion. This week comes courtesy of Conroy Milk, Mr. Milk, who says, "Greetings, BAP. Last week, Crystal Dynamics announced that they would be ending development for Marvel's Avengers.
No.
This continues the trend of live service games having their support ended before they've been able to reach their full potential. See other examples such as Anthem and Babylon's Fall. Why do you think many of these games have seen a lack of success, and do you think the industry will now move away from live service games as the majority of them don't seem to live up to expectations? Cheers, Conroy Milk. Got a little excerpt here.
Okay.
Thought you might.
From a Kotaku article. Late last week, Square Enix announced that its beleaguered 2020 live service game Marvel's Avengers will no longer receive new content or major updates after March the 31st, and all official support for the game will end on September the 30th, 2023, with digital sales ending on that date too. While you'll still be able to play it offline and online with friends after these dates, it's effectively game over for the troubled online action game.
They're kind of just making it into a game that people might actually want to play now.
What, by turning off the
servers?
The servers are staying on.
But you can play with just your friend, or you're on your own.
Or you can play on your own, but it's worse on your own. Mm. Apart from the bits that... God, I remember we were... You remember when we covered it when it came out?
Yeah.
And I was really keen on like the first couple of hours that I played, as was everybody else. Like, hey, this isn't actually anywhere near as bad. And then it became... after a couple of hours... The missions were no longer linear, first-person, narrative-focused. It suddenly became this sort of bland, here's the world map. Where do you want to go to do this weekly quest where you get dropped in a bland environment and have to do really tedious A to B objectives, which are apparently missions. You level up, I don't know. Anyway, it was really exciting for a while, and I was super excited for that game. And I'm sorry to see that it's died, but I can't say that I'm surprised.
Yeah, it's weird though, because like, so Conroy Milk says, you know, where is it? Why do you think many of these games have seen a lack of success? And do you think the industry will move forward from live service games? I've wanted the industry to move forward from live service games for a long time. Hmm. But the fact that they keep continuing to make them makes me think that like, is it just me? Am I in the minority here not liking live service games? The fact that they continue to make them makes me think, they must be popular.
Yeah.
And therefore, I'm always surprised. I think it's weird when like another live service game comes out, it just falls on its ass, like Anthem as well is another good example. And then it's sort of brushed under the carpet and they move on and say, right, we're doing new projects now. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's what I thought would happen. And then you continue to keep making these games. So
I think it's the same thing we were talking about last week in like, well, mine will be different. Yeah. Mine will be better.
Yeah, it's
such a huge gamble every time because the dollar sign possibilities are pretty much endless. Like I think most, let's say, for example, speaking completely out of our asses, that there's a boardroom full of executives who don't know anything about video games, but they like making money.
Yeah.
And they see that Fortnite apparently generated $5.8 billion in revenue in 2021. We don't know profit, but you have to assume that it's a fair chunk of that is profit.
Yeah.
They want that. They want a piece of that pie, but they either have to develop a game that is premium, like Marvel's Avengers was at launch, like Anthem was at launch, like Babylon's Fall was at launch, or they have to push all their chips in and make it free to play, where there's no guarantees.
Yeah.
It's a risk-reward thing where the risk... I think most casual observers would say is probably far greater than the chance of reward. But even the chance of that reward is seemingly enough for these guys to just go, yeah, we're Sony. We're developing 12 live service games by the end of 2025.
Oh, yeah.
So.
And especially if you can like snap up a Marvel, you know, the Avengers license, you're thinking like, this is going to print money.
Yeah. Mm.
So maybe that is partly an incentive. If you might be thinking, oh, do we take that risk? Do we do a free-to-play? Do we do a premium? Then perhaps, oh, Marvel, oh, we can stick that on it. People will pay for that. Mm. And that is what sends you down that path as opposed to the free-to-play.
If Avengers can't do it, and if Crystal Dynamics can't do Avengers can do it, that sentence makes sense. Then, you know, it just shows what a risk it is. It doesn't help that it wasn't the best game in the world.
No.
But, you know, it's those. That's a big studio, a very talented studio, and that's a huge IP. Should have done well.
Yeah.
The only live service game I've ever, like, enjoyed and thought, do you know what? this, I can see why people love this game, is Destiny 2. Mm-hmm. And obviously they put a lot of effort into those games and they're kind of constantly changing. The only thing I don't like about Destiny 2 is that, like, if you take some time off, you miss a significant chunk of lore and story that you then have to just catch up in like blank just text pages that come up when you load the
game.
That's
one of the things I don't like about live service games. I don't think it's the case for all of them. Some of them don't, like, have like a narrative threading through in that sense, so it doesn't really matter. But yeah, for those that do, that is one of the reasons I'm like, I don't want to feel like I have to attend class, you know.
Yeah. It also feeds into the biggest issue that I think a lot of new live service games have, or even existing live service games, is that, and we've said it before on this podcast, their very purpose is to be the only game that you ever play.
Mm-hmm.
They want you to log in every single day, and if you don't, you miss out on story. Yeah. You miss out on daily rewards. Other players will get ahead of you, and they will tell you that. Like, the game will manipulate you and try and make you feel bad for missing school, you know, for not going. And that's why there's only a handful, maybe two or three kings of this genre, and everybody else who has a go stands no chance. Because if your entire model is to be the only game that anybody plays forever, you can't play multiple of those. And it doesn't matter if you're good, you can't attract everybody to your game.
If
people only have time
for
one, maybe two live service games if they're playing them religiously.
Yeah.
So to try and flood the market and have your own success, or not even flood the market, just to try and have your own success is highly unlikely. Because it's such, even though it's not a particularly, it feels like it's a really busy genre and a busy space, but it's not really.
No.
There aren't that many games in it. It's just because of the nature of what they are, there can only be one or two really popular ones.
Yeah. And I think that's it really, isn't it? That's why they continue to be made, and why this won't necessarily spell the end of live service. Well, it won't spell the end of live service games.
Sony are doing
it. Because, doing that many. Because these people perhaps in a boardroom can, you know, they've got dollar signs in their eyes. They see how much something like Fortnite is making. They're like, we're going to do that. And then the reason that it pretty consistently is going to be a flop when you make one of these games is because there's just not room in it's a, you know, it's a one horse race in a sense, or maybe two or three horses at best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even those that have had success in the past are starting to drop away. I'm sure Call of Duty Warzone still has millions of players, but I know that it's got to be down significantly from the pandemic for multiple reasons. Mm-hmm. Obviously, people don't have as much time. But as someone who played a lot of Warzone, I can't flipping stand it anymore. It's just not that fun anymore. The new map isn't the big Warzone 2.0. From anecdotally, from what I've heard, has not landed with core players as well as they had hoped. Mm-hmm. And so it's really hard. Even if you do have that established audience, it's hard to keep them. Like,
yeah,
really hard.
Also, you need to put a lot of work in to keep these games entertaining. Yeah, that's true. Like, you can't just be like, well, we've made the game now, we'll do periodic updates, maybe a bit of content later on, but we've done it now, we can move on to the next thing. If you release this game, you're going to have to keep putting things out, you know, weekly events, monthly events, season events. You have to keep thinking of new things to add to your game to keep people coming back, because people aren't. They're going to get bored. They're going to, like, it's not the same, but Disney Dreamlight Valley, I've now finished everything now, and I can't do anything until the next, like, game bit comes out. Yeah, Animal Crossing, like, you finish what you need to do, and you're like, well, I don't have anything else to do now.
I suppose I'll turn the clock forward to Halloween and
see
if there's any cool
stuff
that
happens. But, you know, these things are things you have to keep constantly doing, which is a lot of work for these devs and a lot of work for these, like, story teams. Obviously, they've got, like, probably a roadmap of where that's going to go, but there's only, like, a certain amount of time. Destiny 2 basically just keep reinventing the game every couple of years to kind of make it a brand new experience. Like, the new, is it the Witch Queen that came out last year? Is that coming out soon? I don't know. There's, like, a new seasons, but they're substantial enough that they add almost an entire game to the game itself. Mm-hmm. Destiny 2 is massive. Like, the size that you need to install for that game is absolutely huge, because it's like four games inside of it, because they kind of periodically make brand new game content for it. But that's the thing, they just haven't got the time or the money when your game's not making any money, like Avengers wasn't, because I didn't know anyone who was still playing it, to keep making it. If you're not making that money, then of course you're just going to bin it off and work on something that you can make a brand spanking new amount of money on it.
Yeah, that's true. That's just happened with, it's not live service in the same sense, but the that Crash Bandicoot Runner game, Crash on the Run, it was like a mobile game. Apparently when that launched in its first 24 hours, it performed better than any other like-for-like game in history, a mobile runner game. So there's like a Mario one, Mario on the Run or something.
There's a Sackboy one coming as well.
It performed better than that. It performed better than Temple Run, is it called? What's that Temple one called?
Yeah, Temple Run.
Sounds right, yeah.
Temple Run was like the first one that came out and they were all dupes of that.
So it had a strong start. Mm. They've just closed it down after like a year because I think it's that maintenance. Like if you're not constantly reinventing it, and they were for a time, they were like adding bosses and stuff. I never played it, but I was following, like, you know, I used to see it on Twitter and stuff. And I imagine that perhaps they've just thought, well, it's not going to continue to make money unless we keep injecting new levels, new bosses, and all that stuff. So you have to continue to spend money to make money from that product.
Yeah.
So it's a tricky model.
It's like, it's not the same level as Marvel Avengers, but Project Makeover, which is an app we know I love. Every week, there's something new happening. Like there's like a new way of getting extra lives, or there's like an event happening where you can like spend these other kind of tickets on a separate like makeover that's happening all month long or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's always something different. Whenever I load the app, it's like, today's new thing. I mean, they're reused. Some of the content happens every kind of month or so, but it's like still new content. So that every time I go on, it's like, ooh. Yeah. Something new to focus on. Good.
It's not it's not that new of a genre now, but it's still very exciting, I think, to a lot of big publishers and even, you know, smaller developers as well, because it's so far outside of the traditional model of video games where you invest a certain amount of money to ship a game, and then beyond perhaps a couple of patches and some support, you know, just to make sure things are okay after launch, maybe some DLC. That's it. That's the game. It goes out and you sell it, and eventually the sales dry up and that's the end of it. You've made your money from you're going to make from that game. And this is a format where they can potentially, if it goes well, make money indefinitely from this game. Yes, you do have to, you know, sink development costs in constantly, but if your game's doing well enough, then you can easily offset that. But I don't think we've seen the last of live service games, not only because Sony have committed to them for a while, and some of those may be cancelled, but they seem confident if they said, we've got 12 and they're coming out by 2025. I think it's going to be a case of the chance of making unlimited money is too alluring. And it doesn't seem like anyone has their head screwed on straight enough to go, a lot of big companies are failing at this.
Yeah.
Maybe we should back off. I think it's going to be a case of each big company has a go, gets burned, and then backs way off.
And then maybe they'll never do one again, or it'll be a while before they do one again, but there'll be some other big publisher or developer who haven't yet made theirs, and they're like, well, we'll try.
We'll have a go.
Yeah.
We'll have a go, but yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, I don't think any of us are really that big of fans of live service games.
No.
But their presence is undeniable, and they will be around for a while, I think, unfortunately, for better or worse, I suppose. Well, make sure you let us know what you think of everything we've discussed today. What do you think of Forspoken? Have you played it? How do you pronounce Gallagher? We discovered that there might be a third pronunciation.
Mm. Yeah, in between pause between sections.
Galaga, wasn't it?
Galaga.
Galaga.
Yeah,
with the
Galaxian, apparently.
With the emphasis on another part of the word. Well, Peter's going to tell you where you can find us around the internet if you want to get in touch.
You can find us on youtube.com/teamtriplejumped and twitch.tv/teamtriplejump, where we put our videos and do our live streams. That's on YouTube as well as Twitch. When we're streaming, we are modded by Lob Rotovich, Trowling Badger, and Mr. Black. If you've got Amazon Prime and you're already paying for it, part of the bundle that you are paying for includes a free Twitch sub, so you can spend that on us and get all the usual benefits. So consider doing that if you would like. Twitter.com and Facebook.com/TeamTripleJump for video and live stream announcements, legacy video content, bits of news, highlights of the week from Twitch, all sorts of things. That's put on there by Fraser for the most part. Thank you, Fraser, for looking after Facebook and Twitter. TikTok.com/@TeamTripleJump for our TikTok. Ashton posted a TikTok that got taken down. Because it was too saucy.
I broke community guidelines, apparently, even though I didn't, but they took my TikTok down.
So you have to be on the button. You have to be checking that TikTok.
They might not be there long.
No. And patreon.com/teamtriplejump for various tiers with all sorts of rewards available. So go and have a look at those as well, please. Thank you.
We have a website. It's triplejump, triplej.mup, as well as jump. It's very clever. If you want to join a Discord, it's triplej.mup/Discord. On Discord, we're modded by Jack, Joe, Tori, and Hollow Eyes. And if you say to do something, bloody well do it, all right? If you want to listen to the podcast in its audio forms, you go to triplej.mup/podcast or check up or catch up on any of our live stream VODs by going to triplej.mup/VODs. If you want to book a cameo from any of us or James Jenkins,
or Jimmy Jenkins,
you go to triplej.mup/cameo. And if you want to buy some sick and cool merch like this, or like this, or like this, you can go to triplejumpshop.com and make sure you're following at triplejumpshop on Twitter for the latest merch announcements.
Absolutely. Why not follow Ashton and Peter on Instagram and Twitter and Hive? Yes, at that Peter Austin and at Scrambled Ashton, and myself just on Twitter at confused_dude. We do lists every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, streams every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Thursday being the joint stream.
Blaze it.
On YouTube, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday being solo streams on Twitch. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly, Friday for patrons of a certain tier, Sunday for everyone else. We do the podcast every Saturday and shows all the bloody time. So come check them out. Why not leave us a 5-star review on your platform of choice? It helps something to do with Algor's rhythms, and we'd really appreciate it. We forgot to mention a pretty significant milestone last week.
Yeah.
We did.
Completely glossed over it. We've hit 250,000 subscribers on YouTube, which is huge. So thank you
very much
for all of your support. It's incredible and humbling, and it's not going to be long until Triple Jump turns 4 years old as well. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be combining the Triple Jump anniversary live stream and the Triple Jump subscriber milestone live stream, where we traditionally play a worst game ever, into one stream at the beginning of February. So keep your eyes peeled for that. It'll be on YouTube, and the VOD will be up on the VODs channel shortly after. There's also something else coming out this week, Ashton. Maybe this week,
potentially next week. There will be the February Gaming Forecast, which is a roundup of all the games that are coming out in February, and also what's coming to Game Pass and PlayStation Plus. So if you want to figure it all out, but you haven't got to go around on all the websites and figure out what's happening and when it's happening, I've done that for you. Don't even worry about it.
Don't even worry about it.
It should be coming up maybe this weekend, probably next week. I think they're releasing PS Plus on Wednesday, which is the 1st of February, which is really annoying.
So helpful.
So it should be coming out, if not now, by Wednesday at least. So
soon.
Check that out if you wouldn't mind.
Just enough time, Ashton, to talk about this week's sponsor once again.
Spooky for the celiacs. It is, of course, Bread Space, the rebake.
Ooh, brilliant. So, so frightening. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening/watching, and we will see you next week. Have a good weekend. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.